Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I'm wonderful. It would be wonderful if the violence could die, but unfortunately, that's just not the way it works.
I know. It's a quandary, a problem with humanity.
It's unfortunate.
I think they're talking about cartoon violence. Not.
Oh, well, that's always good. No, that's never a bad thing.
We need cartoon violence. Happy New Year, guys! Now it is. Woo! It's 2017, which I'm sure will be a great year. Good, no objections. Before we get into this week's episode, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/thesimpsonsshow. For only $2 a month, you can gain access to all of our bonus content, monthly bonus episodes, new episode reviews, all kinds of stuff. We'd really appreciate if you check that out. Also, you can give us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to us, whatever podcatcher service you use, 5-star subscription, all that stuff really helps us out. This week's episode is The Day the Violence Died, episode 3F16, originally aired March 17th, 1996, written by John Swartzwelder, directed by Wes Archer, finished 47th in the ratings, Nielsen rating of 9.2, was the highest rated show on Fox that week.
Well, good.
I don't know what sets this one apart. Why they suddenly people? Was it because of Kirk Douglas?
Either that, or they were just like, "Hey, there's no football law, and there's no new Married with Children, or 90210, or Melrose Place." Maybe
is this sweeps? When's sweeps? What is sweeps?
Sweeps is usually in March of some time.
Well, it is March 17th, so there you go. This is a sweeps episode. That's why they did it. Couch gag is the Simpsons are like blobs, and they get colored in by like car detailer arms.
It's pretty good. It's creative. It's not something you'd expect.
Episode guest stars Kirk Douglas as Chester J. Lampwick. Kirk Douglas recently turned 100 years old. Still going. He's still going strong.
That's true. Let's give it another like 6 hours or so. Or actually, he's probably on the West Coast, so another 9 hours before we have any hubris.
I'm not going to – yeah, I better not say anything. Phil Hartman as Lana Hutz, Alex Rocco as Roger Myers Jr., Jack Sheldon as The Amendment in The Amendment to Be song, and Suzanne Somers as herself. I was actually a little surprised. I never realized that Suzanne Somers actually played herself in the parade scene. The episode begins with Lisa and Bart watching a Itchy and Scratchy marathon, a 48-hour Itchy and Scratchy marathon, which –
which, given how long Itchy and Scratchy has run for it, is not that bad.
I know, but the cartoons are how long? 30 seconds?
That's true. I suppose that would take a really long time to show that many 30-second cartoons.
They'd have to be everything if they're going to take up 48 hours. I'm assuming there's commercials, though. There is one very little... they're enjoying their cartoons. I caught one very short clip just because I would have felt bad if I didn't.
Lisa, if I ever stop loving violence, I want you to shoot me. Will do.
Yep.
I think that's very appropriate for this episode. They see the end of the marathon, or why does Kent Brockman break in? That's what I'm.
I think it's just one of those things like, oh, we have 48 hours to fill with 30-second cartoons. Let's go ahead and throw a news report in there real quick.
So we get a news report that there is going to be an Itchy and Scratchy parade for the 75th anniversary of Itchy and Scratchy, right? That's what it is.
Yes.
Okay. And, of course, Bart and Lisa immediately want to go get seats. It is nighttime, but Marge will not let them go alone.
Bye, Mom! Bye, Dad!
Bye, kids. On your way back, pick up a six-pack of beer.
Bart, Lisa, it's 11 o'clock at night. Where do you think you're going?
Downtown. We gotta get seats for the Itchy and Scratchy parade.
I won't have my children sitting alone on a cold, dangerous street all night. Home or you go to?
Oh, why can't they just take the gun?
Why can't they just take the gun? So this
right? That seems like it'd be the easiest thing to do.
This disputes the, I think, the assertion from the Cartridge family that they don't have a gun. So they camp out on the main street, I guess, directly across from the comic book store, Android's Dungeon. And it is still open. So they go check it out. Apparently, they're just showing a 70s Itchy and Scratchy cartoon where they meet Fritz the Cat. Fritz the Cat famously is one of the, I'm not sure if it's the first, but is famously known as an animated film in the 70s that was rated X before they had NC-17.
Which is really weird. Like, having something X-rated back then was weird, but man.
It's Fritz the cartoons. Cat. Have you never watched Fritz the Cat, Matt?
I have not.
It's an interesting thing. I wouldn't call it good, but it's interesting. But of course, Bart and Lisa, they're a little, I would say they're probably too young for anything related to Fritz the Cat, but comic book guy tells them about, you know, sex and narcotic consumption, et cetera, et cetera. Tells them to get lost. Bart notices that he has an original itchy animation cell that it costs exactly $750.
Exactly.
Exactly. He also mentions High and Lois because it makes him laugh.
Which is weird because I've never thought of laughing at High and Lois.
How much experience do you have with High and Lois, Matt?
I most times growing up, that's you know, I saw it every time I read the comics, I'm pretty sure, if that's the one I'm thinking of.
Okay. I'm curious. Because I don't really have any memories of it at all. I didn't really read comics as a kid, though, the newspaper comics.
I did, because it's all we had back then, back in the bad old days.
Oh, back in the good old days when the newspapers were all we had, and there were no books, or television, or radio, or outside.
Well, there was outside, but no one wanted to go there.
It was
kind of the worst.
We cut back to Bart, Lisa, and Homer, who have fallen asleep at some point in the night on their little tiny folding chairs. But unfortunately, they parked them right behind a grandstand, or bleachers, and so they have no view. Matt has decided to add to the notes that parades are stupid.
It's true. Parades are awful.
We did have a quite... Matt and I had a... We had some problems with parades a few days ago. We were trying to meet for lunch, and there seemed to be some issues with a parade through downtown Orlando. So they are problematic at times. I don't know. I would... An itchy and scratchy... Have you ever been part of a parade, Matt?
I have, lots, when I was in marching band, and they sucked just as much back then.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's not so bad being in the parade, but I'm like, not if you're in marching band. Marching band is, you're just walking the entire time carrying something, and
it's
also,
very hot.
Also playing and also wearing basically what becomes a parka. But I have been on a float during a parade, and that is pleasant. You're just sitting up there, you're driving around, you're high, above everyone, you get to throw candy at them.
I was about to say, you need to clarify that one.
I mean... What kind of parade do you think it was?
I don't know. Was it the April 20th parade?
No, it was actually a Christmas parade. I was Joseph.
Oh. Hmm.
I was Jesus' father.
Did you have to wave or hold a tough position for a while?
No, I just sat and waved and threw candy at people.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's not so bad then.
I was a kid. I don't know what I was doing. So they have no view of the parade. They're trying to see what's happening. We get Suzanne Somers and I think, was it David Brinkley, who's not voiced, they couldn't get him, so I guess they just have Harry Shearer?
He has a pretty obviously fake voice.
And Harry Shearer just kind of does that. Him or Hank Azaria generally do the, like, hey, it's not that person, but it's, you know, it's whatever. They can't see anything. Bart gets fed up and joins the parade, and he even gets a call out. Someone's like, yeah, Bart! If you listen real close, I appreciate that. But then the parade crosses the railroad tracks into Bumtown, which I don't think we've ever heard of Bumtown before.
No, I'm pretty sure this is the first appearance of... Well, technically, doesn't Bart go to the wrong side of the tracks when he in Bart versus Thanksgiving? That's where he gets...
He does go to the wrong side of the tracks. They do not call it Bumtown.
I
don't think so. I think they just call it, like, the rough part of town or whatever.
Yeah.
But that name is appropriate because this... It's at this point where the episode starts getting crazy.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, we complain a lot about episodes where the intro doesn't really match the rest, but this one is okay.
It's not that it doesn't match. It's just this episode in particular, like a lot of the itchy and scratchy centric episodes, kind of become deconstructionist and like are self-referential and look at like cartoon violence and cartoons and animation and are making jokes about how the Simpsons are a cartoon and like play with the format a little bit. In this episode, if you start to think about it even a little bit, it is absolutely insane. Because they go to Bumtown, the parade,
God damn it.
The internet has told me that I should continue. The parade rushes through Bumtown. They floor it. Bart is left.
Smart folks.
It's a poorly planned route. Even Dave Brinkley says so.
Yeah.
But Bart is left behind in Bumtown with a bum who is throwing tomatoes at the parade. And that turns out to be a Mr. Chester J. Lampwick, who introduces himself and why he's so angry at the Itchy and Scratchy parade.
You invented Itchy? The Itchy and Scratchy Itchy?
Sure. In fact, I invented the whole concept of cartoon violence. Before I came along, all cartoon animals did was play the ukulele. I changed all that.
Well, I'm not calling you a liar, but I can't think of a way to finish that sentence.
So I'm a liar, am I?
Itchy the Lucky Mouse in Manhattan Madness.
That's the first Itchy cartoon ever made, and it was made by me, Chester J. Lampwick. Find me a 90-year-old projector, and I'll prove it to you.
Okay, so off they go to Springfield Elementary. That's a good joke. Good, like, very quick, like, hey, obviously.
It's like, where are we going to find something that is 90 years old? Obviously, a school.
Yeah. The dude's name is Chester J. Lampwick. Lampwick is his last name.
Uh-huh.
It's just, I think, a good like, sign of, like, the territory we're going to be entering in with the insanity. I love Chester J. Lampwick. He's a crazy, ridiculous character. But they go to school, they watch the animation, the tape. What is that, like, what kind of film is that? I don't even know.
It's probably before 8mm. I mean,
yeah, it's big. It's a
whatever
giant,
Thomas Edison used.
It's an old timey film reel. You know what those are. And
it looks like reel to reel tape that you used to record audio back before audio cassettes.
I don't know. It's a good simulacrum of, like, what we think of probably what old film would look like, but we don't really, what do we know? But I wish I could communicate I didn't want to pull the clip for this, even though it's amazing. I just, cause it's mostly visual. It's a silent film, and Chester J. Lampwick, Chester plays the piano while they're watching this silent film, this animation. And we have Bart and Milhouse kind of narrating. It's great. And racist. Towards Irish people, it's not as bad now because you don't really think of being racist towards Irish people as being really that racist. But in the early 1900s,
was the cool racism.
Yeah,
I was like, everyone wanted to be racist against the Irish and the Italians.
Yes. So we see the Manhattan Madness where Itchy kills an Irishman and then Theodore Roosevelt. Because, of course, I mean...
Yeah, because, well, I mean, if you had an authority figure to rail against in those days, it was probably Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, I could... I picture Teddy Roosevelt as kind of like the hunter in the Bugs Bunny cartoons, like Elmer Fudd. I feel like he's that kind of, like, big bravado and masculine image.
Sounds about right.
It's a great cartoon. It's fantastic. And that it's like the.
I mean, it's very Itchy and Scratchy. Yes,
it is. It's very violent and stupid, but I mean, I like everything about it, and the fact that it is like this old style cartoon, but it is added in with the Itchy and Scratchy touch with the ultra violence in there, and like it's sort of like a very small bit of like Mystery Science Theater 3000 because we have like Bart and Milhouse just shouting over just yelling at stuff, and it's really enjoyable. Little touches like Milhouse like reading their narration from time to time, but then he can't read fast enough to finish it. Like they really make it feel real. And
you also learn that Milhouse has quite the learning difficulties for when it comes to reading.
He goes to Springfield Elementary, Matt. I mean,
that's a good point.
It's not they're not known for their for their education standards. I think
for their edumacation standards.
Edumacation standards. It's impossible. So Bart believes Chester's claim now. He's seen it. He knows that this is real. Unfortunately, the film burns up in the projector. So the only evidence that Mr. Lampwick has to prove that he is actually the creator of Itchy is gone. And he decides to go back to Bumtown and be a bum again. And Bart is upset.
I'm just impressed he was able to keep that film in a workable state for, that's got to be, what, 80 years, probably?
Well, at the time, 70.
70 years. He has a 70-year-old film that still plays, even though it was probably on nitrate film, which was incredibly flammable.
Well, it does burn up. I mean, that's not crazy.
That's true. That's probably why it burned up, but it must have been like perfectly sealed.
But with that, we go to commercial.
And when we come back, we see Bart trying to convince Chester J. Lampa that he should go to Roger Myers Jr. for money. Turns out that he really admires Roger Myers Jr. and says that he is a good man.
You can't just go back to the gutter. You created Itchy. You should be a millionaire.
Roger Myers wouldn't give me a cent in the 20s. Why would he give me anything now?
You asked Roger Myers Sr. for money. Roger Myers Jr. is in charge of the studio now. He's a good man. Every Christmas, he goes down to the pound and rescues one cat and one mouse and gives them to a hungry family.
Yes, Roger Myers Jr. is clearly a wonderful individual who gives animals, cats and mice, to starving families, which they will then have to feed and definitely not eat because, yeah. Anyway, Chester thinks on this for a little while and agrees and says that, well, we can't go tomorrow. Animators have AA on Monday, so the studio's closed on Tuesday, which I feel like is yet another dig at, you know, the meta-ness of the episode of all the their cartoon writing brethren.
There's a lot of that in here. Just much like, was it like Itchy and Scratchy the movie and
Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie, which we haven't gotten to yet.
Marge versus Itchy and Scratchy.
Oh, yeah.
That as well. They're, all of them all have kind of like, ha, 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 we're laughing at ourselves. Isn't this silly?
A lot of them are animated as animators.
Yeah, you see, John Swartzwelder is in this episode.
Yeah.
As well.
So basically, Bart offers his house to Chester. So he takes Chester to the basement, puts him in there, tells him to ignore the cot, just sleep on some boxes, make sure he doesn't know what radon is.
That's a good gag. Also, his parents won't mind because he's not going to tell them.
Yes, important not to tell your parents if you're keeping a bum in the basement. But unfortunately, Chester continues to ask people for spare change as they walk by. So Homer gives him some spare change. And I don't know why that always makes me laugh so hard.
It's
probably because I missed it the first like dozen times I watched this episode.
I mean, Chester is like firmly ensconced in the bum lifestyle, in the panhandling, etc. Like even after later in the episode when he has money, he still acts, you know, the same way.
He offers to give shoe shines and comb people's hair, which having another person comb your hair is extra weird unless they're a barber.
Maybe he used to be a barber.
Maybe that's how he gave other bums haircuts. That's how he made his money. But eventually, Lisa rats him out because there's a lot of weird smells and cursing coming from the basement, and Dad is upstairs.
Yeah, that's great line. It's very good.
Yeah. But by appealing to their sense of justice, Bart gets them to let Lampwick stay until, at the very least, they have a meeting with Roger Myers Jr. But when they do, he quite rightly points out they have zero proof. Basically, Lampwick wants $800 billion, billion with a B, which is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's, again, this episode, like, we're only getting to the top of it. Like, this, the... His name is Chester J. Lampwick. He talks about he got a. We didn't. You didn't. I didn't mention that when he introduced himself to Bart, he talks about how he went to Roger Myers Sr. and he got an anvil thrown on him.
Oh, that's right.
But he had an umbrella on at the time, so it was fine.
So he was fine.
Yeah, and now he asked for $800 billion. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, originally, way back when I first watched the episode, I didn't listen to it. I assumed it was $800 million because that's within the realm of possibility. Very unlikely for an animation company to have, but I mean, Disney could probably scrape together $800 million if they really had to. I mean, Apple has a few hundred or a few billion in the bank right now. They're probably close to something like that. But $800 billion is ludicrous to the extreme. So obviously, Roger Myers Jr. kicks them out repeatedly. Of course, this is old hat to Lampwick, and he tells Bart the same thing. Bart decides that they can't give up. They are going to use the legal system. So they go to the best lawyer they know, Mr. Lionel Hutz.
All right, gentlemen, I'll take your case, but I'm going to have to ask for $1,000 retainer.
$1,000? But your ad says no money down.
Oh, they got this all screwed up.
So you don't work on a contingency basis?
No. Money down. Oops, shouldn't have this Bar Association logo here either.
I apologize because that's very much a visual gag, but I love it so much. So if you have never seen this episode, go search for the picture of the works on contingency, no, comma, money down.
No, money down. I mean, his the way he pronounces it does add a little bit. Like, it really emphasizes, like, no, money down. Yeah, I need, obviously. Come on.
Yeah. Which, honestly, a $1,000 retainer for an attorney is actually pretty cheap. Most of them require far more than that.
I would suggest that $1,000 for Lionel Hutz is way too much money.
Well, for Lionel Hutz, yes. But for most lawyers, that's you know, a paltry sum. Of course, they arrive home, and they are downtrodden at this result. Of course, they all want Lampwick to leave as soon as possible, but they let him stay because they're far more decent people than I would ever be. At dinner that night, Grandpa recognizes Chester J. Lampwick and says that he gave him a plate of corn muffins for him to, I believe this is painting the fence or building a chicken coop. I don't remember which task he was supposed to do.
Well, he does both. Like, he gets accused of
one is for Krusty, one is for Grandpa. Yeah. I don't remember which is which.
And I don't. Again, then two old men get in like a full on Looney Tunes like cloud of dust fist fight at the dinner table.
Well, that's true. In addition, the reason Lampwick gives is because the corn muffins were lousy. So he gave him food, and then because they weren't good enough for his obviously high bum standards, he does not do the work. At this point, Bart basically asks Homer for a loan of $1,000 to get a lawyer for his bum, and Homer does it just on the hope that it will get rid of Chester. At this point, we then go to the courtroom where the ubiquitous blue-haired lawyer is defending Itchy and Scratchy, and he basically goes over all the salient points, all the important things that you would mention in intellectual property disputes such as this, basically showing the first Itchy and Scratchy cartoon, showing the original sketches for not only Itchy and Scratchy, but the other members of the Itchy and Scratchy family. The only one I can remember is Sarcastic Horse, Dinner Dog, and there's at least a couple others.
Manic Mailman.
Fox. That's the Manic Mailman. He's important to the plot.
He's a very important. He's a very important stick figure of a mailman.
That's true. I thought Flashlight Fox was far more important.
But that was based on a real story, though.
Exactly. But you know, obviously, Lionel Hutz and Bart are not making a good argument because they have no case. They have no actual proof. They only have hearsay and conjecture, which are kinds of evidence. I feel like that clip should be played at the beginning of every court case for the jury. Remember, hearsay and conjecture are not real evidence. That's why you can object to them. There's also a great bit where Lionel Hutz says, "If I hear objection sustained one more time, I'm going to scream," to which the blue-haired lawyer objects. It's sustained by the judge, and Lionel Hutz screams, which, you know, little court gag.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty funny. Bart, however, has an inspiration as the case is winding down, and they ask him if they have anything else. So he runs off to get the animation cell from the comic book guy because he's like, I've seen this version of Itchy that Lampwick showed me before. And he realizes it was at the comic book shop. So Lionel Hutz then proceeds to call all of his surprise witnesses again. The ones that I found the most funny were the World's Fattest Twins and Ralph. How they added to the case, I couldn't tell you, but I be interested to know.
John Swartzwelder was among the surprise witnesses as well. That's where he was. Okay. He's drawn in there. He's before Ralph, I believe.
Of course.
Lionel Hutz is not a good attorney. Although
he
has nothing to work with, so I can't really blame him in this case because there's nothing. They have no evidence.
They have zero evidence. But once Bart borrows $750 from Homer and comes back with the animation cell.
Wait, Matt. We have to mention that because we haven't talked about it yet. There's, I think, three times in this episode where Bart just goes up to Homer and asks him for a large sum of money, and Homer just reaches into his wallet and hands it to him.
Well, I mean, there's the $1,000 for Lionel Hutz, the $750 for the animation cell, and I can't remember.
$183,000. That's next. That's later.
We'll get to that. But yeah, Homer doesn't give him that time. The $1,000 and the $750, he just gives him right out of his wallet. Which, why is Homer walking around with that kind of money?
Apparently, that was a very contentious joke in the writers' room because Matt Groening didn't. Matt Groening especially hated that joke. The fact that just because it's convenient, Homer has $1,000 in his wallet. I mean,
Well, back when credit cards weren't as high, was widely accepted, maybe people had to. It's like, hey, I feel like buying half a car.
Yeah, Homer was going to go buy a car the next day or something. Again, this episode has just insane, crazy things in it. Like, it is not even...
It's one of the very unrealistic episodes.
It's not pretending to be, like, a down-to-earth sitcom. This is very absurd kind of cartoon logic.
To be fair, it does not have a manatee saving Homer and giving him CPR. That will come in later seasons, but it's still pretty, you know, out of this world.
What did you say?
I said that it didn't have Homer being saved from drowning by a manatee and being given CPR by it.
Which episode is that? That's not The Simpsons, right?
You're gonna be looking
That's not The Simpsons, though. That's not The Simpsons. I can't.
Homer being saved.
That would be really dumb if that wasn't a Simpsons episode, wouldn't it?
I know it would be really dumb. You're going to be fine this episode, aren't you?
It's Bonfire of the Manatees, man.
That's right. Of course, Bonfire of the Manatees. Of
that's not a Simpsons. That would never be a Simpsons episode. They wouldn't be so ridiculous.
Of course,
that's Family Guy, right? Or South Park, or one of those other shows.
Yes, it's definitely Family Guy.
Okay,
definitely.
Good, awesome, cool. Makes me feel better.
I also forgot the fact that during the deposition we find out that Krusty has seen Lampwick before, when he gave him a plate of blintzes to either paint a fence or build a chicken coop. I can't remember how they matched.
I think it was paint a fence first, and the chicken coop was with Krusty. That is what I recollect.
Yes,
they also get into a full on like fist fight in the middle of the courtroom. Well, Krusty's not as old as Chester J. Lampwick.
No, but we've seen hints that Krusty is 60 plus, so yeah, obviously this is a long time ago.
You're as young as you feel, Matt.
Oh, that's true, and Krusty obviously feels much younger thanks to all that child blood and all the bionic parts that he now has. He's got a zipper and a pacemaker, so you know he's well on his way to becoming a full-on cyborg. However, once Bart buys the animation cell, getting back on track... there's no signature or date, so Bart tears apart the frame, which I gotta imagine there's a better way to get into the picture than just destroying the frame, literally like breaking the glass. But he does, and it turns out there's a message on the animation cell saying, to Roger Myers, senior, you know, your moxie makes up for your lack of talent, Chester J. Lampwick, and it's dated, you know, something something 1919. Which, of course, they take as gospel right then and there. There's no, like, oh, he obviously faked this or anything. No one ever bothers to try and get it, checked or anything. They just accept it because it's a cartoon. But then we get a great speech from Roger Myers Jr. about where ideas come from.
Okay, maybe my dad did steal Itchy, but so what? Animation is built on plagiarism. If it weren't for someone plagiarizing the Honeymooners, we wouldn't have the Flintstones. If someone hadn't ripped off Sergeant Bilko, there'd be no Top Cat. Huckleberry Hound, Chief Wiggum, Yogi Bear, Andy Griffith, Edward G. Robinson, Art Carney. Your Honor, you take away our right to steal ideas, where are they gonna come from?
How about Ghost Mutt?
The court rules in favor of Mr. Lampwick. Itchy and Scratchy Studios will pay a restitution of $800 billion. So that amount will probably come down a bit on appeal.
So,
Marge's, like Marge's idea is the best. Ghost Mutt.
Ghost Mutt. That's where Poochie came from, was Ghost Mutt.
Hey, there's nothing. Ghost Mutt's not a bad idea. You could do something with that.
Are you implying that Poochie was a bad idea?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, clear that Poochie was a terrible idea.
I'm not implying it. I'm directly stating it. Yes. Poochie is not a good idea.
The first time I saw this scene when I was a kid and they mentioned Chief Wiggum and
Edward G. Robinson,
I was like, wait, he mentioned Chief Wiggum. I don't understand. I did not understand the meta-ness when I was middle school.
The referential stuff. It's been little tiny mentions here so far, but it gets even crazier. Like, this episode. It's insane. The $800 billion, of course, immediately goes to Chester J. Lampwick, of course.
And a check. They just write him a check, which, you know, when you're giving him more than the GDP of, you know, probably half the countries in the world, maybe more, that seems unlikely, but at least they're realistic in that it shuts down Itchy and Scratchy Studios and the smokestack stops spewing smoke from an animation studio.
Well,
they must be making their own papers.
Well, you need coal to power the animation.
Of course. No, those are all of Roger Myers Jr.'s cigars. That's what those are. That's where he keeps them, in cooling towers.
Oh, okay, got it.
But when it shuts down, Bart is sad and we go to commercial.
Bart is sad and we go to commercial. Both the first and second acts of this episode end with Bart being sad. And then we go to commercial. For different reasons. Justin J. Lampwick is now very, very rich. And so he pays back The Simpsons. He gives them $1,000, the $750, plus a couple extra $100 for their trouble. If he was a 800 billionaire, maybe he could just give them a little bit more than a couple $100 for doing all that stuff, or letting them live with him and giving him a chance at life and all that. But okay, whatever. He disappears to go buy his solid gold house, which he's been dreaming of ever since he became a bum.
Which you could buy with $800 billion fairly easily.
You could. I don't want to live in a solid gold house.
No, that's not bad. Do you know how hard it would be to install cabling in the walls in a solid gold house? You'd have to, like, I guess you could melt the walls and put them back together, but you know.
Wouldn't it get really hot during the summer?
It would. A metal house gets ridiculously hot in the summertime.
Yeah, I mean, and in the winter it'd be super cold. Like, that just seems like upkeep would be terrible. You'd have to have carpet everywhere. He has lots of throw rugs. That's his secret. It's just his secret.
Sure.
He just throws throw rugs everywhere to cover up the hot metal or cold metal. But there's no more Itchy and Scratchy. They're shut down. So Krusty has to go to a different source for his cartoon entertainment on his show.
Hey, who left all this garbage on the steps of Congress?
I'm not garbage. I'm an amendment to be, yes, an amendment to be, and I'm hoping that they'll ratify me. There's a lot of flag burners who have got too much freedom. I want to make it legal for policemen to beat them, cause there's limits to our liberties. At least I hope and pray that there are, cause those liberal freaks go too far.
Why can't we just make a law against flag burning?
Because that law would be unconstitutional. But if we change the Constitution,
then we could make all sorts of crazy laws.
Now you're catching on.
What the hell is this?
It's one of those campy 70s throwbacks that appeals to Generation Xers.
We need another Vietnam to thin up their ranks a little.
What if people say you're not good enough to be in the Constitution?
Then I'll crush all opposition to me, and I'll make Ted Kennedy pay. If he fights back, I'll say that he's gay.
Good news, amendment. They ratified you. You're in the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
I had to include the entire song.
You didn't get the editor's like, doors open, boys, and you have all the crazy ones come in?
Yeah, but it's all visual. You're not getting anything out of that.
Yeah.
And that was already very long. So we get the Schoolhouse Rocks parody. I don't know. How do you feel about that, Matt? Do you like that?
It's an interesting idea. I like the idea of a Schoolhouse Rock parody, but that's cynical even for me.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I reading the news group reviews, a lot of people loved the Amendment to Be song. I think it's probably just, you know, our age. I think it has something to do with it. I did not grow up with Schoolhouse Rock. I was too young, much too young.
No,
Schoolhouse Rock was well before our time. So that may be a part of it. People who are older at the time who did grow up with it might find more enjoyment out of it. It's still it's like a super accurate parody. Like, that is, like, they really do capture the like all the look, the sound, everything about Schoolhouse Rocks and all that. But
the music sounds very similar to the Schoolhouse Rock stuff I've seen before.
Yeah, exactly. So it's I appreciate it for like that. I just don't necessarily get a lot. It is very like this episode in particular, very everything. It's written by John Swartzwelder. It feels like, and I'm actually really interested because it's been mentioned that instead of this, there initially was going to be a cartoon that was going to be parodying the Simpsons style of humor. And I don't know but they got cut because they said it wasn't funny. I'm very curious what that would have been. Like, that would have even been like, this isn't that self-referential. It's just like, hey, it's a parody of an old animated program for kids. But an actual cartoon that was in the Simpsons making fun. Like, I'm curious what it was. It's probably something we'll never know.
I mean, it would have been a Tracy Ullman short.
I think so. That'd been great. That's actually, I would sign on for that. I mean, we effectively get that at the end of the episode anyway. Yeah. But Bart and Lisa want more Itchy and Scratchy. They did not realize that Itchy and Scratchy would get canceled because of their involvement with Mr. Lampwick. So they go to Roger Myers Jr., who's now is living in a hotel, who has a box for a desk and is keeping his dad's head in a cooler because he couldn't keep it in the cryogenics facility anymore, which, if you aren't aware, that is direct allusion to Walt Disney, who was, you know, famously supposed to have frozen his body till they could fix, you know, they could solve death.
All the many things wrong with it.
Yes, they can solve death. That's how you just freeze it until you fix it. They don't have the money, so they go to Chester J. Lampwick. He has a bunch of money. Maybe he can get royalties if he funds more cartoons. He'll get more money, so maybe that'll work.
Oh, hi, kids.
Hi, Chester. Listen, would you pay to make more Itchy and Scratchy cartoons?
You'll get more royalties.
I don't need any more money. I'm not greedy. As long as I've got my health and my millions of dollars and my gold house and my rocket car, I don't need anything else.
Yes, but...
Not interested.
Not interested, Matt. Nope, he already has his solid gold house and his rocket car.
Oh, and there's something else he had. He mentioned something else, but I can't remember what it was. His health. Yes, his health and his solid gold house and his rocket car.
I mean, those are good things.
It's true. It's very important.
I don't,
but you know, I would still want more money. You know,
I mean, it's not bad to invest your wealth, do something with it. Everything about this episode is kind of antithetical to what we expect from what the Simpsons were at the time.
True, because you know they were big on realism, and you know it's a cartoon, but you know you could still do other stuff. You wanted it to, you know, anyway.
I'm just like. The third act really starts kind of falling apart from the typical Simpsons structure, which, I mean, they allude to later on. But the fact that Chester J. Lampwick is not really a good guy. I mean, he's not.
No, he is a terrible person.
He is like, hey, yeah, I was a bum, and now I'm like one of the wealthiest people on Earth, and I'm just going to sit in my front yard with my rocket car and my gold house.
And he just kind of offered to shine people's shoes.
Yeah, that's something that stuck around with him from his, I guess, panhandling days. But they don't. Obviously, he's not giving them the money. They still need it. They ask Homer for the $183,000. We mentioned that earlier. Homer does not give them the money. He reaches into his wallet once again. Luckily,
but stops. They're like, whoa.
Wait a minute. What do we need that money for? But Bart and Lisa. They think they can find a way to bring Itchy and Scratchy back. We have a sequence which we've seen in other episodes. You know, in many Bart and Lisa team up episodes, like
Sideshow Bob Roberts.
Krusty's with Krusty's father. What's the name of the episode?
Crap. That was back in season 2 or 3, right?
Yes, it was relatively early. It was...
Like Father, Like Clown.
Like Father, Like Clown, like multiple times. We've seen the Simpsons kids hit the books in a montage. They figure stuff out. They save the day. Except this time, they're struggling. And they're like, we just can't do it. And it's obviously rewatching it and thinking about it. It is clearly... like purposefully aping those that kind of segment, that kind of moment in the episode, because they're like, yeah, we can't do it, wah wah. And then Marge is like, yeah, no, you can. You got it. You can do this. And they're like, yeah, you're right, Mom. We can do it. And it feels, I mean, they, I know they, I, it has to be on purpose, because that is what this whole ending of this episode is kind of lampooning and making fun of, the fact that, like, the inherent artificiality of a lot of Simpsons plots. Like, obviously, they have to return the status quo. Obviously, Bart and Lisa are going to save the day. Why wouldn't they? Who else is going to do it? And, hey, Bart and Lisa come up with a plan. And they get on their bicycles. And they rush over to tell Roger Myers Jr.
But,
a perfect plan. Now, Roger Myers Hotel is just
and
around...
And so, when no one could think of a plan to resurrect Itchy and Scratchy, a young boy, a wonderful, irrepressible young boy, took it on his own to solve the problem. He discovered that the Postal Service's Mr. Zip was just a ripoff of my father's stick figure character, Manic Mailman. So the government gave me a huge cash settlement, and Itchy and Scratchy Studios is back in business. Thanks to you, Lester.
What the hell is going on?
I don't know, but it looks like you might have a little competition all of a sudden.
Thanks, everybody. But I couldn't have done all this without the help of my brainy sister, Eliza.
I, too, owe many thanks to Lester and Eliza. This is a great vindication for anybody who was ever taking a bath, went to get the paper, fell down, and had the door slam behind them and the doorknob break off.
And I'd like to thank Lester for reuniting me with my estranged wife.
I never even heard about that.
I don't understand it. We're always the ones who solve these problems.
I guess you don't need it now, but we had a plan, too.
Hey, great. Listen, write it down and mail it to last week when I might have cared. I've got cartoons to make, kids.
So we see that the day is saved. Itchy and Scratchy's back. Return of the status quo. Everything's good again. But Bart and Lisa didn't do anything. It's Lester and Eliza who look like... they are early models of both Bart and Lisa. Like, that is what they are.
If they had done a Tracy Ullman cartoon instead of the Schoolhouse Rock parody, that would have been even more awesome.
Yeah, and they not even saved Itchy and Scratchy. They also saved a Pooh from his apparently arrest about of public indecency. I think that's what it was. And reconciled Krusty with his wife. So, I mean, Bart and Lisa weren't important. They didn't really, all they did was ruin Itchy and Scratchy, and then they didn't really do anything to do anything. And the episode ends with them kind of mulling it over.
You kids must be so happy your cute little cartoon friends are back on the air.
Yes, well, technically everything worked out all right, but...
But? Well, I wasn't the one who solved the problem, and neither was Lisa. There's something unsettling about that.
I really like
that noise.
Those timpanis. That's really good. Yeah, Lester is skating by ominously during that clip, staring at Bart dead in the eyes through the window. How does that make you feel, Matt? The self-referential stuff at the end.
It's a little extra weird. Gotta be honest with you. I don't know. It's just. This episode, when I first saw it, I was in middle school, and I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. And then the more I watch it, the more I'm just like, this episode just does not fit. It's weird. It's funny, you know, especially the whole courtroom thing, Lionel Hutz, that's really funny, but just odd.
It's a very strange, crazy episode. Like, it takes place, like, it is purposely poking fun at the entire structure of how The Simpsons works. And... it has a lot of, like, solid jokes in it, but I think I find it more interesting than funny. Like, I really appreciate them playing with the expectations of the audience and what The Simpsons was at the time, and, like, there's other Itchy and Scratchy-centric episodes that have done similar things, but nothing to, like, this extent where they just kind of discount two of the central protagonists of the show, of where, like, hey, Bart and Lisa are, like, not like, they are central to the beginning and the middle, but in the end, they're not important at all, and we're just following, like, supporting characters, kind of.
Yep.
It's interesting, but I don't know. It feels a little too middling to me. Like, it feels like it's not going far enough. Like, I wish it was a little bit more... like, I guess it had to be, because, it, you know, like, that first act is relatively normal-ish. Like, aside from the presence of Chester J. Lampwick, it feels very much like a Simpsons episode. And then the second episode gets weirder with the $800 billion, and the mention of Wiggum and Edward G. Robinson in the court case, and like the back, there's like little background jokes about stuff that is just constantly poking at the reality of the Simpsons. And then the third act kind of just completely deconstructs things. It's like, hey, this show is not actually the show. Like, what? It's really strange. Do you think it's saying anything, or is it just like, hey, this is absurd. We are absurd.
I'm going with the absurdness. There doesn't seem to be really anything they're trying to say about this besides the fact that, hey, entertainment's a weird industry. That's the most I can get out of this. Maybe I'm wrong. If you guys out there listening are aware of some kind of meta plot they're trying to, you know, inform us about, please let us know. But this just seems weird at best.
I think it really is just the, hey, like, I think they're just, if they're saying anything, it's more just the structure of, like, this show has been around long enough that, like, the audience kind of understands how episodes go. And mm-hmm. we want to kind of just show you that it can be inherently be absurd if you, like, deviate from it even a little bit. It makes everything seem crazy, which I find interesting. I don't know. It is entertaining. Like, I like the episode. It's hard to place it among other episodes, which we will have to do at the end of the show.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a little weird.
It's going to be weird. No submission for this for my favorite episode. If you have a particular episode that is
shocking.
Hey, people like different things, Matt.
That's true. I find this hard to believe anyone who listens to our show would have this as their favorite episode. I would love to be wrong and be told why, because that's interesting. But
I'm sure there's people who do find it their favorite, even if they're not listening. Maybe they're big Kirk Douglas fans. I did not mention Kirk Douglas recorded each line twice, and that was it.
Wow.
He would not do the more than two takes on any line. I didn't have.
Well, he's Kirk Douglas. He's just too good for that.
Well, apparently, also he found the headphones they gave him to listen in painful, so he didn't put them on, so that he couldn't even take direction from outside the studio.
I mean, as someone who has giant ears, I can definitely see that, but that still kind of sucks.
But if you have a particular episode that's your favorite, submit it at simpsonshowpod@gmail.com, and I'll read it when we get to there. Next up, Matthew, it is time for comments from the newsgroup.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the newsgroup is where I will comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons newsgroup, see what people were talking about week or two after an episode debuted, what they thought, what was happening in the world in relation to The Simpsons, what people thought was interesting. It was pretty well liked. Aside, there's a couple notorious downers, which I think is just the weirdness of the episode kind of didn't like it. But aside from that, many, like, lots of high grades. People liked it. They really, really, really liked the Amendment to Be song. They really liked that.
That's so weird, because, I mean, like I said, that's pretty good, but it just, all right, fair enough.
I do think it's just simply a factor of people's ages. Like, people who are our age then were, like, right in the wheelhouse of growing up with Schoolhouse Rocks and all that stuff. So they probably, it hit a particular chord. From what I can glean from the reviews, it seems it was just like, hey, it's subversive and different. And people, I guess, in the news group in particular, were hungry for that kind of stuff. They wanted stuff that departed from typical sitcom-y stuff. Also, one other thing I thought was really strange but fun is a report from a guy. Just thought you guys would be interested in this. I was at a Gin Blossoms concert last night in Catholic University, Washington, D.C. And when the lead singer came out for the encore, he stepped to the mic and did an a cappella rendition of the Flaming Moe song, the parody of the Cheers theme song.
That is awesome.
That's really... I tried to find any recording of... Apparently, he's a big Simpsons fan, but I could not find any recording online of any Gin Blossoms Simpsons covers anywhere. I would love to hear it just to see what it'd be like, but there you go. Not much else. We can move on. Our next segment is time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
The listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite Mr. Burns quote? Tons and tons of great answers, as you would expect. From John first, we have family, religion, friendship. These are the three demons you must slay if you wish to succeed in business. When opportunity knocks, you don't want to be driving to the maternity hospital or sitting in some phony baloney church. Or synagogue.
Oh, man. How do people always pick my... You guys are too smart. That's
Matt,
what I'm going
to
say.
Matt, it's you're allowed to share. It's okay. We can share.
I know.
John, his answer. Compadres, it is imperative that we crush the freedom fighters before the start of the rainy season. Remember, a shiny new donkey for whoever rings me the head of Colonel Montoya. Hmm? What? Oh, and by that I mean, of course, it's time for the Worker of the Week Award. That's good. From Chris. My name is Mr. Snrub, and I come from someplace far away. Yes, that will do. Mr. Strub's good. Lauren, mm-hmm. this is a thousand monkeys working in a thousand typewriters. Soon they'll finish the greatest novel known to man. All right, let's see. It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times. You stupid monkey.
Excuse me.
That's good. From Morgan, the Japanese, those sandal wearing goldfish tenders, or are you familiar with the state's usurpation laws? Oh, silly me. I must have just made that word up. From Aaron, ketchup, catsup. Ketchup, catsup.
I like the delay there. It's good.
It's important. Yeah, it's important in delivery. From Sarah, is it about my cube? David, I have the Rolling Stones killed. From Diego, beep, beep, out of my way. I'm a motorist. From John, look, Smithers, a bird has become petrified and lost its sense of direction. From Andy, Social Security number 000. Oh, no, he says ought, doesn't he? Social Security number ought 2. Damn Roosevelt.
I believe he says not instead of ought.
Oh, not. Okay. I apologize. Cause of parents' death got in my way. From Ross at RP Jenkins. Whoa, slow down there, maestro. There's a New Mexico. Ian at Ian Davis 1. What was I laughing at? Oh, yes. That crippled Irishman. As an Irishman myself, it really strikes a good chord. From Caroline at Karolinski. Hello, my name is Mr. Schnrub. Also at Robert at Barlow 2711. Those sandal wearing goldfish tenders? Bosh. Flimshaw. A little extra note on there.
The Flimshaw is important.
Flimshaw's good. And finally, from David at So Many Coffees. I'd like to send this letter to the Prussian consulate in Siam by aeromail. Am I too late for the 4:30 autogyro? Now, what is your answer?
Yes, you are. I'm going to go with the very first quote from this. Great job. It was John. Family, religion, friendship. These are the three demons you must slay if you wish to succeed in business. I especially love the synagogue pronunciation.
Yeah,
it's quite good.
The nice emphasis. I think mine is cause of parents' death got in my way.
Yeah,
it's a very simple, very simple. It's just alludes to the long history of Mr. Burns and how he's a monster. Next week's question. What is your favorite self-reference? What is your favorite time The Simpsons referenced itself in jokes? Things like that.
It's going to be a tough one there.
It will be a tough one. You have to think about it. I trust you guys out there. You guys always come up with good answers. I'll post this question on all our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, at Twitter, @SimpsonsShowPod, and you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Matt.
Uh-oh.
Well, I don't want to hear it. I do not want to get your uh-ohs when you're winning by 15 points. It is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge. So Matt and I will each stump each other. Try to stump each other with three trivia questions, one easy, one medium, one hard. See who's the best at Simpsons trivia.
It's usually Robbie.
It's almost never me, actually. We have a wager for the season. Whoever loses must attempt to eat 64 slices of American cheese in one sitting and not die. It's important.
It's that not dying part that's hard.
It's fine. It's barely cheese.
It's just vegetable oil.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a lot of oil. It's good for you. That's good for you.
Yeah, your omega-6, omega-3 balance will be fantastic after this.
Why are you saying you're, like, I've already lost, Matt? Why are you saying that?
Well, is it mathematically possible for you to win at this point?
Yeah, sure it is.
If so, I'm not doing my job well
enough. No, there's like 6 episodes left, and I could, if I shut you out, I'd win by a lot. But that's just probably not going to happen. But we'll see how it goes.
We'll see.
Give me an easy question, Matthew.
All right, sir. Your easy question. This is pretty easy today. I kind of went easy on you.
Oh, that's nice.
What is the 18th Amendment?
The 18th Amendment? That was
indeed
prohibition of alcohol.
Indeed it was. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. That was more of an American history question, but I appreciate it.
Well, you'll see why.
Oh, yeah, I wonder. Your easy question. In the Blunder years, Marge uses what paper towels to drain the quarry?
I believe it's brawny, isn't it?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah. Yeah, brawny.
It is burly.
Burly! Oh, no!
Tricked you.
I did a tricky
thing.
You did.
I have to use tricks. I can't I have to guerrilla warfare. It's the only way I can even get close to winning this thing.
Okay. Are you ready for your medium question?
Sure, shoot.
All right, your medium question. Get to it here. What does Rex Banner get for his birthday at the ice cream shop?
It's an ice cream sundae.
It has a very special name, Robbie.
I have to give the special name. It's
Yes, you have to give the special name.
Is it? I think I know it. Is it the Banana Kaboom?
Oh my gosh! You're coming out swinging today.
Is that correct?
Correct. Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you. I need all the points I can get. Your medium question.
What is the one you came up with? Not hard enough for me?
No, it might be too hard. We'll see. Great. Also from the Blunder years. The hypnotist that performs at the Pimento Grove and ends up hypnotizing Homer is named what?
Oh, God. I'm just going to lose a lot. Oh, God. Is it Mesmero?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
It's Mesmerino.
Mesmerino. Dang it. I knew that didn't sound right.
What's your hard question?
All right. Let's see your card question. All right. What is the first homemade alcohol we see Homer bowl into Moe's in Homer versus the 18th Amendment?
Okay. Got to picture it. Okay. So the bowling ball.
To get this, I'm just screwed.
Bowling ball comes in. It has a cork in it. Moe uncorks it, smells it. This is the thing that first popped in my mind. I have no idea. Cherry cordial.
Is that your final answer?
Sure. It's my final answer.
Okay, well, I'm lucky this week. It is actually a bathtub mint julep.
Oh, mint julep.
I think you're just going easy on me.
I don't know. I don't know why cherry cordial popped into my head. I was like, I went with my gut. Okay, yeah. Your hard question. Also from the Blunder years. Homer, after being hypnotized, begins screaming and does not stop. He is calmed down by drinking what? And I need you to be very specific.
I've asked you this question before.
Oh, no.
Yaki Indian memory tea.
Oh, I hate you, man.
I'm sorry, man.
I didn't lose ground. There's that.
That's true. You didn't. You did good. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, I'm very impressed that I just tied you. Ugh. I thought I had you. Forgot.
I hate it
when that happens. Okay.
It seems to happen to us a lot.
It does. There's only so much facts in The Simpsons. Okay. I have one bonus question for you, Matt.
Ooh, yeah.
This is from Joanna. She writes, "Hey, I know how much Matt loves trivia from on-screen lists."
Oh, God.
So from the recent Christmas episode, Nightmare After Christmas, who are the five possible converts from Reverend Lovejoy's list?
I have no clue, so I'm gonna go with Kim Kardashian, Beyonce, Kanye, Krusty, and Sideshow Mel.
They're all Simpsons residents, so I don't know. They're all Springfield residents. I don't know why you're giving me celebrities.
Well, then, never mind.
How would Reverend Lovejoy be converting Kim Kardashian? Could you make that clear, Matt? I'm not sure where.
Lady Gaga has appeared on this damn show. Okay. She was
this damn show. Angry. All right. No, the answers.
I am very angry.
The answers are Mr. Largo, Apu, Comic Book Guy, Willie, and Cookie Kwan.
All right, fair enough. I mean, you've got one gay guy, one Hindu. Comic Book Guy is probably an atheist, but you never know. So, you know, it's a pretty good list for him.
Willie's probably Catholic, right? That seems appropriate. Cookie Kwan.
He's definitely not Presbyterian.
No, who knows what Cookie Kwan is? She's a capitalist. That's her religion, is capitalism. Yeah. Nightmare After Christmas is a recent Christmas episode. Pretty good.
Yeah, it was surprisingly good.
Anyone out there hasn't watched it, it's pretty good. But we can wrap it up there. If you have any questions or themes you would like us to try and use, you could send them in previously mentioned places. We can move on to our final segment we end every single episode with. It is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show where Matt and I rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Where do we put this one, Matthew?
This is... It's always weird because all the ones where it's like you're not super sure about, those are the hard ones. The really good ones are usually pretty easy to pick. This one is, I don't know. I mean, I liked it. I appreciated the guest star. It's a Lionel Hutz episode, so I really enjoy those. But honestly, it doesn't really have what makes a good Simpsons episode for me. That's why I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, where did we put the Marge versus Itchy and Scratchy?
Where's pretty low. Itchy and Scratchy, the movie, is 86.
Itchy and Scratchy and Marge is 120.
Itchy and Scratchy and Marge is also, yeah. We tend to not like these very much.
Yeah, they're good. They're very inside baseball kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I think I'm not opposed to, obviously, I especially like episodes that play with expectations, and I mean, we even gotten to multiple episodes that, like, season 7, 8 especially has a lot of episodes that do that. But I don't, I like them being a little bit more, I don't know, separate. They're like, keep it like, because of all the animation jokes about all this, it's very self-referential. Like, it's very like, like, I feel like the ones that are smarter about it. Like, I don't, this is very much like, hey, like, tongue in cheek, wink at the camera kind of stuff. And that is stuff I don't like as much, generally. Okay. Well, let's start with, how about A Star Is Burns? That is number 60 right now. Is it better than A Star Is Burns?
I don't think so. I was actually going to say, let's start with, what is it? Itchy and Scratchy, the movie. And I think Itchy and Scratchy, the movie, is better. Would you agree or disagree?
Oh, man. Because I don't... It's not necessary. I mean, I wouldn't call that... Itchy and Scratchy movie, I don't think, is as close to it, because that is more about Bart and Homer's relationship, I think.
That's true.
But I still think yeah, it is probably better. Homer Defined is better. We're going down the list.
Yeah.
Bart the Lover, I would say, is better. How about Marge Gets a Job? Is it better than Marge Gets a Job?
I wouldn't think so. Would you?
I think it's in that territory somewhere
in there. Yeah it's a little weird. It's what I'm trying to go for here.
How about Mr. Lisa Goes to Washington? That's 104.
That's a tough one. I really like that episode, but this one's got, it's just got the cleanness of a later Simpsons episode, so it's definitely gonna be somewhere around there.
I actually would put it a little bit higher, but I'm just seeing where you're going to land.
Yeah, I think it belongs a little bit higher than that. What number did you say that was? I can't seem to find it in my brain. Oh, Mitchell Lisa Goes to Washington.
104. There we go. It was 104. I would probably put it... there's New Kid on the Block. How do you think New Kid on the Block's better?
I do. I just... This episode's got some good jokes, but it's just kind of out there at best. I'm actually looking right around 98, One Fish, Two Fish, Blowfish, Bluefish, which is basically an episode all about Homer and his existential angst. And then below that, you got Bart Gets Hit by a Car. I do think this is definitely better than Bart Gets Hit by a Car, but it's somewhere in the 97, 98 range for me. What do you think?
It's a tough one. Because I think it's better than Marge Gets a Job. I think it's better than that. I think it's better than Radio Bart. I feel like you're right. I think it's better New Kid on the Block. I think Bart the Lover is probably where it hits, like, I don't know, Bart the Lover's, I like Bart. I think this episode is in the same neighborhood of, like, Fear of Flying, which I think has a lot of, like, does interesting things, but kind of doesn't nail execution very well.
Yeah.
I think this is also, like, very interesting, and I, like, enjoy it a lot, but I don't necessarily I don't know. It's a very strange thing, and trying to compare it is hard. I think it is better.
Let's say this. It's better than New Kids on the Block. Not as good as Bart the Lover. So
okay, you want to put it there? 93, is that okay?
Yeah, we'll put it 93. It's when you're doing these one at a time, you realize that, you know, Homer versus Lisa and the Eighth Commandment is lower than New Kid on the Block, and you know that's not really how I would have put it in the moment, but you know, that's just the way these things, the way the chips fall sometimes.
Your memory of things, Matt, is often not a good gauge of
right
quality.
Indeed.
So okay. The Day the Violence Died is now number 93 on our list, right above New Kid on the Block, right below Bart the Lover. First place is still Cape Fear. Last place, still Homer's Odyssey, number 137. We'll be disappointed in one day. Fairly certain of that. Although, and Cape Fear is still strong, been there for a while now. But I don't think it's going to make it through the end of this season.
Really? Well, let's take a look. What do we got the rest of this season? A Fish Called Selma. Oh, man. Bart on the Road. 22 short films about Springfield. Raging Abe Simpson is Grumbling Grandson and the Curse of the Flying Hellfish. Much a Poo About Nothing. Homer Palooza and Summer of 4 Foot 2. It's gonna have a lot of competition. Let's put it that way.
That Homer Palooza, I have. But Summer of 4 Foot 2, Matt.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a very good episode. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where we go. I don't know. Fish Called Selma's next, and that is a spectacular episode.
Indeed.
It is, and I didn't pull it, but Nerds is in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
It was Nerds was in this episode, not Fish Called Selma. But Nerds is in. Okay. You can find this list at our website, simplythesimpsonsshow.com. Everything there broken down by season and as a total. Also, every TSMR segment broken out individually. Also, links. New episodes downloadable and streaming to all of our episodes on Facebook, links to Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed. Also a link to our Patreon. If you want to throw the show a couple dollars, we'd obviously really appreciate it. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. Also, please check out my other podcasts, The Handsome Boys Comics Hour. It's about comic books. And The Serial Fanaticist. That's FANATICIST. It's about kind of general nerdy topics. Matt does not participate.
Anything people are passionate about.
Yeah, passion. It's important. Matt does not participate in social media. There's a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That's true. I have decided in preparation for the new year, I will hunker down just in case 2017 actually somehow ends up worse than 2016. I will be my underground bunker in the hot tub. So unless you're a chlorine delivery guy, sorry. Or a lady, I suppose.
There is good things in 2016.
There were a few.
There's some good things.
I don't think it balanced out.
I had a birthday. That was good.
We all had birthdays, and we're all getting very old, so no.
Not everyone had a birthday in 2016, Matt.
Everyone who's still alive.
There you go.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. On that really happy note, Happy New Year, guys. Be safe. It's already over by the time you hear this, so I guess it doesn't matter. Be safe in life.
That's true.
Honestly, it's good advice all the time. Be safe. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.